Our guest is Alice Fay, who is the ambassador of good health for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. I'm so happy to spend some time with you today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
It's nice to see you. You look as beautiful as you ever have. You are a true superstar of the motion picture world, of the entertainment world. And now you're traveling on behalf of Pfizer.
Pfizer Pharmaceuticals.
And exactly what's your role now?
Well, I'm going on my fourth year, and I travel all over the country visiting young elders. I don't call them senior citizens. We don't like that word. So young elders is it. And talk about a better way of life as we age, about being responsible for ourselves, and about taking good care of ourselves. And I tell them about, I pattern my life after what I call the Pfizer Five, and that one is staying active and involved, and two is eating a sensible diet, and three, no smoking, which is so tough for so many. And four is exercising at least two or three times a week, simple exercises, just walking or stretching, swimming, and five, seeing your doctor whenever necessary. And I throw in, this is no number six, but mine is, and for God's sakes, have a sense of humor.
That's right.
It helps, you know.
Sure.
So that's it. It works for me, and
I can see it works for you.
Yeah,
works
I'm very in good well. Shape. Very good shape.
It has taken you all across the country in the past 4 years.
Oh, we've been all over, and we're going now. We're going to go out again next year, starting in January, and we'll hit Texas and Florida and Boston and all over again.
And what kind of a reception do you get?
We get a wonderful reception. Yeah, all the young elders come out and they enjoy it, and they I made a film for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals called We Still Are, which runs 45 minutes in a composite. It's a composite between, like, with my all my films, film clips, and then my pitch for good health. So together, it's a real cute film. They enjoy that.
I can't see anybody finding any harm in that. Sounds wonderful to have a
great
little look at the film retrospective.
Yeah, and they love
the
it. They sing along with the, you know, with the songs, and they have a wonderful time.
You're the gig from Wake Up and Exercise. From the movie Wake Up and Live.
Wake Up and Live. That's where it came from.
Yeah, that's the first thing you mentioned, I think, is really very important for anybody, especially someone who has retired. Be active.
Stay active and involved.
Stay active
and very,
involved.
Very important. Because it helps you. I mean, if you're moving all the time and you're walking. I mean, walking is one of the greatest things you can do. Swimming is terrific, but sometimes you don't live in a place where you can't swim, unless you go to the Y or something like that. But walking, staying active and involved. And I took up painting. I had more fun painting. I mean, there's so many things to do. And there's so many things that young elders wanted to do, but they couldn't when they were raising families. I was making films, and I couldn't do a lot of things that I can do now.
That's nice. It's great to have that kind of freedom, isn't it?
And you have that in mind and say, well, this is, I should be having fun now, not sitting around griping about everything, you know?
I think another thing that's important is to plan a little bit. About what am I going to do tomorrow, or what can I do today?
I try
some
to find
to
one
do
thing
it.
Every day to do that I want to do. You know, go to the library, listen, visiting the hospital is pretty good too. You come out of there feeling very good, knowing you're not in there.
That's right.
You
that's
know,
right.
There's so
that's
many right. things to do, but people tend to sit down and think about it, you know, mañana.
Now, you have, I got a little advance information from Pfizer. And people can get an Alice Fay poster. You're a poster girl. You've got your own poster out now.
Finally got a poster.
It's a color poster, full color poster. Yes. Wake Up and Exercise with Alice Fay.
Yes.
And
it tells you the exercises, how to breathe. It shows me bicycling and swimming. And it tells the folks what to do. And then they write back and they join the Alice Fay Young Elders, and then they send them another little pamphlet that gives them more exercises.
So I
and
have
it's for free.
It's free. I have an address here, which
great,
I'm going to I'll mention, and then I'll mention it later on too.
I appreciate that.
Send to Alice Faye's Exercises, care of Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. Now, if you can spell Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, you've got it made anyway, right? That keeps you awake and alert anyway. PFISER, Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, Box 2852, AFP, Grand Central Station, mm-hmm. New York 10163.
Great.
And you'll get the poster and a worksheet and schedule and everything.
Wonderful.
It's people who are over 50, right? So you
mm-hmm.
have to admit to be over 50.
Yeah.
Wouldn't work for Jack Benny.
No.
39,
no.
Right?
No, he's 39. No, he couldn't get one. I have to hold off for him.
I'd like to talk for a while about your career, Alice Faye. Before you got into show business, you were the daughter of a policeman, is that correct?
That's right.
In New York City?
Lived in New York City on the west side, what they called Hell's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anything hellish about it. It was really a pretty nice place. And I had a wonderful life. I had my very own fire escape that I could sit out there and dream on. And I wanted to be, you know, a movie star. And I hoped I would be. And I graduated grammar school. And then I went and got a job with Chester Hale at the Capitol Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I really started.
And what was that job?
In the chorus.
In the chorus at the Capitol Theater?
Hofer. Hofer, they call
Hofer,
it then.
Yeah.
Hofer.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there. Then I worked for MTG. And then he had a place called the Hollywood Restaurant.
Nils T.
T. Granlund.
Uh-huh.
Right. And then I went into George White's Scandals in the chorus, naturally. Mm-hmm. Ethel Merman was the star. Mm-hmm. Rudy Vallee was mm-hmm. starring in it. Ray Bolger
was
in it.
You were singing now at this time in
no,
the
no,
chorus?
No,
just
I was
dancing,
in the chorus.
Still dancing in the chorus.
And Rudy decided he wanted a girl singer with his band, which was then unheard of. Outside of Mildred Bailey, she mm-hmm. was the only one that I knew that was a girl mm-hmm. singer. She sang with Whiteman, right?
Mm-hmm.
White.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided he wanted a girl singer, and what he was going to do was have a little contest. So he chose whatever girls were interested in it. We got together, and he made little records of our voices. I sang Mimi. I forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, he chose me.
Had you done any singing before this?
No, nothing.
You just saw a chance for work.
Huh? I tried for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked the quality of my voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he took me with his band, and then when the show closed, he was also doing the Fleischman Hour.
Yes.
And then he went to California to do George White Scandals film.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I went along with the band. And when we got to California, there was some mix-up as to who his leading lady was going to be. She was a German actress. It didn't work out. Well, someone from the studio had seen me on the Fleischman Hour with Rudy,
mm-hmm.
and they decided to test me, and they did, and I was there at the right time,
the
right
part.
Place, and I got the part, and that was the beginning of my picture career.
Which was very long and very wonderful for
so
you.
Rudy was wonderful. He left me there and said, well, good luck. And
now, once you started with the movies, then you left the band? You left Rudy in the band?
Yes.
You had done quite a few of those Fleischman programs.
Yes,
though,
I did.
Mm-hmm. It was a major radio show of the period
Fleischman
of time.
Hour.
Fleischman Geist. And Rudy was known at that time, too, for introducing new talent to the public. So many people got their their start. I think Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Yes, he was wonderful. I liked Rudy so much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He certainly fostered a lot of
he
careers.
He was a good boss, and he taught you a lot of good mm-hmm. things, like mm-hmm. being on time. If you weren't on time, he docked you.
Oh, he did?
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. if you forgot lyrics, or he docked you. I mean, he gets you pretty much on your toes.
Got you in the pocketbook.
Yeah, always.
he went on then with his career, and you went over to
it was
the movie Scandals was at Fox, 20th mm-hmm. Century Fox.
Mm-hmm. And he was in it.
He was in it. Yes,
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
Then you were signed by Fox before this or after the Scandals film?
After the Scandals.
How did they sign you up? On the basis of your performance?
They liked what they saw, and they sign you. You start at $7.50 a week,
uh-huh.
and you work yourself up to $7.50. Then you go to $12.50. Then you go to $17.50. Then you go to $2,000, and that's the way they paid. They paid you then.
You had a 7-year. No, it was normally a 7-year contract.
But they had more or less in between. You know, we torn that up and made out of.
After I did
several films.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Now, Fox really owned you then at that point, as far as your career was concerned, right? And it was the the legendary studio system that they had, where that you would take classes and all that business.
No,
were doing
I didn't
that like
do
Metro.
That. No, I didn't do that. I didn't. As a matter of fact, that's when I lied about the age. When my mother said, "Someday you're going to be sorry," and I said, "Mom, when I'm 60, who's going to care?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'll never make 60. You know what I mean? Who's going to give a damn?" Well, and it's paid. It's really been true because, by God, every once in a while I pick up the paper and they got me 75. You know, that's 3 more years, and I don't like it. But I say, "Okay, Mom, you know, you were right as usual."
Mother's always right.
Mother's always right.
Well,
but I think everybody did that. Ann Miller did it.
Oh, yeah.
We all lied about our ages because we didn't want to go to school on the lot.
I see. Yeah.
That was all.
That's it.
Yeah,
So you had a succession of wonderful films then in which you almost immediately started starring in these pictures, didn't you?
I worked with, I did a lot of B pictures for Saul Wurzel, and that was with Lou Ayers and... Then of course, when I went to the big studio, then I worked with John Payne and Don Ameche and Jack Haley.
Oh, and Tyrone Power.
And just kept going on and on from there.
We talked about your Wake Up and Exercise idea. The film in 1937 was Wake Up and Live.
I sing a little bit on this film, too, of Wake Up and Live.
That's a wonderful song.
Isn't it
great?
Wake Up and Live,
and
Don't Mind the Rainy Patter. Yeah, I loved all those lyrics.
Yeah, great philosophy for it. Walter Winchell and Ben Burney, carrying along their radio newspaper feud.
Jack Haley. Jack Haley was in that, too.
Now, Haley was the fellow who was frightened of the microphones.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that he didn't really sing
Buddy
himself.
Buddy Clark. I found Buddy Clark.
Did you?
I used to listen to him every morning when I was getting made up, and I never heard a voice that beautiful.
Uh-huh.
So I told Matt Gordon about it. He listened. He said, "God, he's great." And he was on the Lucky Strike Hour.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So he called him, had him come out to the coast, and he dubbed... Jack Haley dubbed.
Buddy's voice was for Jack. Yeah,
had
Jack
a great voice.
Looked at, it was a fun picture, movie,
was
the Wake Up and Live girl.
Yes, yeah. It was nice and clean.
Did you? Oh yeah. Listen, every one of those pictures in that period of time.
And they had their own message. You know?
Yeah. Well, and they. You see, you went to the show for entertainment, and that's what you got.
And to be happy.
That's right.
A little tear here, a little tear there.
Tyrone Power and Don Ameche were your co-stars in a movie about Chicago.
I love that. It's one of my favorites.
Is it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That was the next year. And then you brought new life, as they would say, into the music of Irving Berlin in Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Love that.
That was, again... co-star with Tyrone Power and Don Ameche. How long would it typically take to make one of those movies? Those were pretty big budget films for Fox.
Maybe 3 months, three and a half months, something like that.
And it was always on the lot. They never did location stuff.
No, we never did.
At that time.
Never went out and never went off the lot. Because we had our own back lot that was terrific.
Mm-hmm. For a Century City is now out.
Yeah, that's where they had the Chicago Fire.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're all floating around in rowboats.
Was it hard to make those films?
Oh, no, I didn't think so. I loved it.
Get up pretty early for makeup sessions?
Yeah, but you don't know anything else. That's your job. Yeah. What a wonderful job.
That's a very good philosophy.
Oh,
that's right. That's what you do.
I loved it. It's what I wanted. Uh-huh. I was doing what I loved.
And you, with the increasing popularity of every film that came out. You're increasing popularity.
And then, of course, you know, you live with those people, because I used to kid around and call Fox Penitentiary Fox. You live there. You get up at 5:30, 6 in the morning, you go right to the studio, then you're made up, you have your breakfast there, and then you're on the set ready to shoot at 8:30. And then you're there day in and day out and day in, and you sit with the same wardrobe woman, the same makeup man, the cameraman, the lights. You knew everybody. It's a family. It was then. It was the family. Mm-hmm. So it was home. They take me out of there. I was lost until I walked out. You know, when I walked out on my own, that was something else.
A few years later.
But I. It was my home, and those people were my family.
Mm-hmm. I read a note someplace that said that Daryl Zanuck, who was number one there at Fox, was not really in favor of your working on the radio while you were under contract at Fox. Is that a fact?
No, he didn't care much about radio. He didn't want. He wouldn't let us record, make records or anything.
Oh, records. He didn't want you to do records.
No records.
Gee, you know,
it's too bad.
It's funny when you think about that, because the sale of records would help the box office for the films,
yeah,
I would think.
I don't know why they... I think, of course, the musicians' union, you see, and they had to pay musicians.
Look at Bing Crosby. He was making movies and making records.
But he had a different idea about it, Zanuck.
He was really running the studio with an iron fist, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Was he as tough to the movie makers as Rudy Vallee was to the people in his band?
Well, I think you learned something from Rudy. You didn't learn much from Zanuck. He was bossy, and he was smart. He was not a stupid man. He was a smart man, but we never agreed. I didn't get along with him, and it's one of those.
Were you a rascal on the lot? Did you
you
disagreed with him?
I did. You know, I did what I was told, but when I was, got married, and then I'm still doing the same picture that I did 3 years ago, I thought maybe, you know, after doing In Old Chicago and Alexander's Ragtime Band, you'd start doing something more matured. And
the next
thing you want me to do was Dolly Sisters. Well, I'm going right back to where I was 5 years ago, and I said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do something like Laura. I want to do something great. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't hold still for it. So he did give me a wonderful script, Fallen Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really probably one of the best things I ever did in my life. But when I saw it, I couldn't find myself. I was on the cutting room floor, and he was building up then Linda Darnell, which I didn't blame him for. She's a beautiful lady, very fine actress. But still in all, I didn't see anything happening to me. I was kaput.
He didn't have the confidence in you that you had.
He had the confidence in me, but he didn't want to lose that Alice Faye image that he had, that with the singing and all of that. He wanted me to just keep doing those musicals, because the more musicals, the more money for the studio. Then they can lose money on all those dramas, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the musicals were big box office.
They made the money.
Yeah, right.
So I just decided to get out. I couldn't see. I couldn't get along with him. I couldn't gain any time with him. So I just slipped the key and walked out.
And you were independent enough to feel that you could do that.
Well, of course. I mean, it was my life. So I decided to go home and raise my family and learn how to market, learn how to drive a car, learn how to have a dinner party, do the things I'd never done.
Because all your life up to that point, you spent
so I would still be knocking my brains out doing these high kicks with Betty, and where was I going? I just didn't want it. I didn't want any more of it.
Well, you married Phil in 1941, is that correct?
Yeah, 41. We're married 45 years.
How did you meet?
We met through Jack Oakey.
Oh, yeah. You're a co-star in Great American Broadcast.
Yeah, he always said, you'd like Phil a lot, though. But we had our differences before. I had a dog. I lived in Encino. He lived in Encino. And we each had a Doberman Pinscher. And when I go to work, my Doberman used to go down into the little city of Encino around the markets there. Everybody loved it. and his, evidently they met down there and they had a big fight, so Phil called me and told me I should keep my dog at home, and I told him a few things, and so we didn't get along for a long time, and then we finally started dating, and that was it.
Well, I don't see how he could have resisted you anyway.
I don't know. He was pretty mad.
Well, that's just a couple of dogs fighting there.
Yeah, this is, right. Well, this is, my this dog is. Loves your dog.
Well, at about the time that you you left Fox and decided that this was where you should become a little more domestic.
Yeah, right.
Then up pops the Fitch bandwagon on on radio.
Right.
And now, how did that come about? How did you and Phil get the job of the radio Fitch bandwagon? He had been with Jack Benny for a few years.
No, he was still with Jack Benny when we were doing our show. What was offered to him? He asked me if I'd like to do it. I don't particularly like to work with my husband. I don't believe in wives and husbands working together. Mm-hmm. But that's just my opinion. I worked with him, but we didn't hit it off too well while we were working together. He's a little rough.
During that whole radio period there, from 46 to 54?
Yeah. But I made it, but I wasn't too happy. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it.
You were an excellent actress on that program.
Yeah,
you brought a lot of spark and life to the
You know, it's like anything you do, you get better and better and better. But a husband tends to pick on you. Where somebody else won't pick on you.
Well, he might not pick on somebody else.
He wouldn't
either,
pick on Mary Benny. He wouldn't pick on anybody else, but he'd pick on me. You see, so actually, that part I didn't care for.
You had to, in the beginning, when that show first came on, it was live, and I suspect that you had to do at least one, possibly two broadcasts every week. Was there a West Coast and an East Coast, or did you just do one? You know, they used to do a show. A second show for the other half of the country.
Yeah, we did. That's right, we did. In the beginning, I'd forgotten.
Yeah, for Fitch. And then I think the show really came into its own when Rexall came in because first of all...
Well, we were rolling then.
I mean,
we really had it. We had it going.
It was... in my opinion...
We had tremendous writers, too. Yeah. And it was all... It was terrific. It was really going.
Ray Singer and Dick Chevrolet.
Yeah, they were terrific.
You came in at a time, just the perfect time for radio, 46.
Yeah, right.
But by the time you left in 54, so much television had come in on this.
Well, Phil wouldn't do it. I'm sorry. I think that's one of the... one thing I really am sorry for is that we didn't go into television. But he didn't want to do it. He couldn't see another family show on TV. He was afraid. Uh-huh. He was afraid we wouldn't.
It's too bad because I would say that the Phil Harris Alice Faye show was not another family show. It was a very special
show. It
was
really fun.
And your personalities could have easily translated to television.
Yeah, he couldn't see it. You couldn't tell him that.
Maybe he didn't want all the extra work. Huh?
Maybe.
But TV is a hard job. Hard job. Now
I don't know.
He did have a hard time, really, didn't he, for a while, doing the Benny show, and then boom, immediately.
Because in the rehearsals and everything.
Yeah. And then Benny moved to CBS.
Yeah. But Benny was great to him. Mm-hmm. You know, he helped him, and so that things didn't. Everything sort of went along smoothly, the rehearsals and getting to work and all of that.
I want to talk for a couple of minutes about the Phil and Alice show, if we can. How much time did you have to devote to that radio show, generally speaking?
Well, let's see, we had a rehearsal on Friday, and then we rehearsed Sunday morning, and then we did the show Sunday afternoon.
So it was basically 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days.
And you never saw the script before you walked in on Friday, probably?
Never.
Of course, the characters were so well-defined.
Yeah, after a while, you knew what you were doing.
You had to do a little... one of the highlights was your song and Phil's song, too, but that's what we looked forward to in every show, the musical breaks.
And we had Walter Scharf with his... You know, music. He was a wonderful, wonderful arranger, Walter.
I need to ask you about Walter Tetley.
Yeah.
Now he was on the Gildersleeve radio show as his Gildersleeve's nephew Leroy, and he was a wise kid on that show.
Yeah,
but
kid.
On your show, he was the grocery boy.
Brung the groceries. Julius Abruzzio.
Yeah. Yeah. Brung the groceries.
Brung the groceries. Miss Faye, he said. Yeah. It was funny.
He had some wonderful comedy.
He had a great delivery.
Yeah. Now, he was a master of timing. He was. He didn't lose an inch with Phil and Frankie, Elliot Lewis.
Yeah. Never.
He was a small person or a little person or something like that, wasn't he?
You know who he always reminded me of? The boy that used to do Philip Morris.
Oh, Johnny and Philip Morris.
He was,
uh-huh.
Yeah, he was short.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of a different-looking person.
But he was so funny, and some of the characterizations that they got into with Elliot Lewis, and we had the privilege of talking to Elliot one time.
Did
he was telling us so much about
he's great.
About this show, and he said that it was really first rate, and it really was.
Yeah. Well, Phil, tried to go first class and had the best, the best he could get.
Now that show was produced by. The agency for Rexall, I guess, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they wove into the show the commercials even more so than, for example, in the Jack Benny show, the sportsman came in and they did a little business there.
Yeah,
and Fibber McGee and Molly, you may remember that Harlow Wilcox for Johnson's Wax.
Right.
But in your show, half the show was... dealing with Mr. Scott, who was the sponsor of, who represented Rexall, the sponsor, and they never even broke for a commercial in the middle. They just had all the stuff going through, whether Phil was going to have his contract renewed, and Gail Gordon came in on the show.
Yeah,
for
it was wonderful, too.
Did you enjoy doing all the radio stuff?
Oh, I loved it.
It was, at the same time, you're raising your family, and the show... you and Phil, husband and wife, and two daughters on the show. Of course, those were actresses.
Yeah, we tried to get the girls to do it, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't. No way.
They were too shy. Didn't want to do it.
Yeah, they were too shy now because they're sorry. that they didn't go ahead and try it. But we had two lovely girls there.
Now, what are they doing now?
They're cute.
Your daughters.
My daughters. Well, let's see. They're both married, Alice lives in New Orleans, and Phyllis lives out there in California.
You get to see Alice
regularly? Oh, yeah, we get to see her quite a bit. We're going down to see her Thanksgiving, and then she comes up home Christmas. So we see a lot in between.
I have to ask, how's Phil?
Oh, he's wonderful.
How's he doing? He's doing golfing?
Right in there, and he's going up to do a benefit Friday and... Thursday in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's going to a golf tournament in Phoenix. So he keeps moving.
That's good. Well, that's what you
Stay
active and involved.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. After the radio show went off the air, you popped in a few years later in another movie, back to Fox again, right?
Fair. Back to State Fair.
That was a remake of.
It was awful.
Didn't care for it.
I didn't like it. I say the only thing that came out of it that was any good was Anne Margaret.
That's right. She
but
was
I
in
thought that, the picture it was. They've made it so many times. It was awful. It was like Hello, Dolly.
Yeah. The
Everybody
remakes.
Had a chance at it.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't good.
In the early part of the 70s, you teamed up with one of your former Fox co-stars, John Payne.
That's right.
And,
we went out on Good News.
Good News.
Oh, I love that.
And I think you played Chicago.
Oh, yes.
And,
we had a long run here.
No, we saw you here.
Oh,
yeah,
I loved
it. Wonderful
show. That was so wonderful to me here.
Yeah. How many times over the years have you played in Chicago?
Oh, my God. With Rudy, with... Scandals with Good News and the Chicago Theater and on personal appearances and the other theaters. I've been here many, many, many times.
You sang in go back to 1937 for a minute with Hal Kemp and the orchestra and a radio broadcast from Hollywood.
Yes.
For Chesterfield Cigarettes.
That's right. Yeah.
No smoking now, though, right?
No smoking. No.
Did you sing with any other bands on a regular basis besides Rudy and Kemp?
Just Rudy and...
And Kemp was basically for that radio show, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You had a fantastic career.
I really have.
I think you've enjoyed it, haven't you?
I've loved it. I loved all just going from one thing, and then this, when this door opened up, this was something else. It's Pfizer Pharmaceutical. What is this? You know, and here I was. You know, just couldn't believe it. And I was ready because I've been taking care of myself. I've been exercising and swimming. I went to a spa when I was 40, and I at Arden's, Elizabeth Arden's. Mm-hmm. Had a week there, and I thought, well, where have I been? I've been missing this, and I got into this exercising thing, and swimming, and exercising in the pool, and I thought, this is for me, and I've never stopped.
Well, I hope you never will.
That's what I tell all my young elders, to get up and do something, move it.
To wake up and live, right?
Wake up and exercise.
Okay, yeah, wake up and exercise. Well, talk again about that poster.
Yeah.
That's a long address. If I would suppose if someone
they
writes to Alice
it.
Fay,
yeah.
Pfizer, P-F-I-S-E-R, Box 2852, AFP, Grand Central Station,
that's all. New York.
New York, 10163.
That's it, and it's for free, and they'll love it. I'm
and they
sure.
Got a nice photo of you on that
yes.
poster, too.
Yes, yeah. Lovely photo.
Well, on behalf of all your fans in this area, and on my behalf, too, I thank you for doing all the things you did to entertain us over the years.
God bless you. Thanks. I'm so happy everyone remembers.
Oh, who could
you know?
Not
well,
remember
Well, I don't know.
Alice
you know, gee, you don't. I can't believe it sometimes, but it gives me a big kick.
Well, stay with it. Keep going.
I'm hanging in there.
We love you. Thank you very
Thank
much,
Thank you
Alice.
So much.